Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. It's another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. Hopefully this one's going to be a little less traumatic than last week's post-Spurs misery fest, seeing as we played a game and we actually won it. But to help me dissect both the Ostersons away game and look forward to the Ostersons at home game, there's a lot more that's been going on in the week for the Arsenal world. So to help me wade through all that, joining me are Sylvain Gemme and Anita Sambol. How are you both?
Hello, hello.
You're all good. Well, that's good. That's a positive starting point. Without getting on to any other news first, let's just talk about the Ostersons game straight away. Did you both have the pleasure of watching Arsenal's latest Europa League adventure?
I did.
Just watch the highlights.
Part-timer. Well, starting with you then, Anita, I mean, what did you make of it as a whole?
Well, expected. I mean, yes, we don't look very good away, and it was really, 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 really cold night up north in Sweden, as everyone seems to be talking about that and nothing else. But and it was the artificial pitch and everything. But I mean, we couldn't expect anything less than a win. I mean, they are a 21-year-old club, and they aren't that really good. But yeah, it was easy. Easy win, although the second half was a bit not as good as before, but yeah, it was good. Good to see an away win and clean sheet that we haven't seen in a while, and penalty safe. I mean, what else could you wish for?
I'd forgotten what one of them looked like.
Yeah, I think it was first penalty save since 2014.
Yes, probably since Chesney, sadly. But anyway, we'll avoid speaking about that. what impressions did you have immediately, Sylvain?
Honestly, I saw the result and the play that was quite good. Especially as I still had the first game in my memory, and it was really, really depressing to see. I think it was definitely a vast improvement, but as I just say, easier against a lower quality team.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that really,
for the confidence, basically.
Yeah. I mean, a win always helps, particularly when it's relatively comprehensive without you having to go full out. I mean, the Arsenal team clearly took their foot off the accelerator in the second half. You know, the tie. As soon as Mesut Ozil scored that third goal, as long as we didn't completely balls things up, the tie was relatively over. And Ostersons, you know, they've had some great results earlier in the Europa League this season, particularly beating Galatasaray and getting through to this stage. Subsequently to that,
this was their first loss at home in Europa League this season.
Yes, and they've got some really good results at home in the Europa League. I suppose the question is how much of it was down to them being timid, as they were in the first 20 minutes, and slightly overawed by the prospect of facing against our mighty Arsenal Warriors? And how much of it can be attributed to the fact that their season hasn't started and they've played one competitive game in the last 2 months?
Well, obviously both had some influence, and that we sent there some players from first team that weren't playing in the Europa League earlier. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I think we would do good even without some of those senior players that were playing.
I mean, did anyone stand out for either of you in terms of a positive performance?
Well, it was definitely nice to see Ainsley Maitland-Niles in his preferred position and everyone's preferred position for him.
I mean, how did he do for you? Because there seemed to be, from what I saw of the game, a slight uncertainty about whether it was he or Elneny was the more defensive. And do you think they were picked and given the instructions of alternating, or do you think one of them was actually detailed to be the more defensive and maybe I just missed something and not being very bright?
I think that, in fact, Elneny did a bit better, but maybe because that's because he was more used to playing that position since Maitland-Niles was playing in a completely different position before. And Elneny is had a few really, really good games in that position already. So I think he was a bit better, but it was really nice to see that Niles still looks good in that his preferred position and that we could definitely use him there.
I mean, obviously, Elneny does have the advantage. You know, he is a player who, lest we forget, has played many, many, many times for his country in that role and has obviously played quite a lot in top European leagues for quite a number of years. And I think that showed a little bit in the game in that he seemed to have slightly more certainty about what was expected of him.
And yeah, exactly. That was I was trying to say, but yeah.
Well, and also with that, slightly more confidence in being able to carry it out. I mean, Maitland-Niles, like a lot of younger players do in playing in positions of responsibility, probably erred on the side of caution a bit and played a bit safer than perhaps might be his natural game. Although at the same time, he was probably still a bit guilty of being a little bit too casual for me at times. And that's for me, the one concerning thing about his game. I think technically he's got a lot to offer and obviously physically he has as well. But I think he's got to be careful to not let his concentration slip, because he tends to, a bit like Granit Xhaka, give one pass up a game which plays his teammates into significant amounts of trouble. Obviously that's something which he's going to have to develop and work on quickly in order to be able to get the trust of the manager to play in such an important role in the team.
Yeah, true.
I mean, one of the things I did find interesting relating to that, and it is a positive thing, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, was it seemed to me that as the game went on, he was the teammates around him were talking to him a bit more in terms of giving him slight positional advice, or you know, telling him to come back or when to sort of rotate with Elneny positionally, and that's something which obviously we've been very critical of the team of not doing a lot of, but it's heartening for me to see that that's happening a bit when there's a particularly young player thrown in. I was just wondering if either of you saw that and if you had any thoughts about that, both in the game in question and in general.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a major help for a young player like that to be able to learn from his teammates. I mean, you often hear that in the interviews they give to media and newspapers and stuff like that, that they appreciate help from senior players and both in training and in match. So obviously that helps a lot to a young player. If you know, yes, as you said, he will probably have a bad pass that will bring someone else in trouble, and that's important for that teammate to react in the way that, okay, he's a young player, he has to learn, he will learn, and it's not one way to shout at him and be angry at him and not pass him the ball anymore. The other way is to, you know, tell him what to do better in next time and not repeat the same mistake. So, yeah, I didn't notice that much, I have to be honest, but if I believe you that you notice, and yeah, it's really nice to see things like that. It's, I mean, I would expect something like that happening in Arsenal, actually.
I mean, what did you both make of also the return to the team of Danny Welbeck? I mean, obviously, subsequent to the game, there's been a lot of criticism online, as there always is, everything related to Arsenal by Arsenal fans, who seem quite an angry bunch at the moment. I mean, what did we make of Danny Welbeck's performance? Did you think that for someone who's missed so much game time, that was as much as we could expect? Or were you slightly optimistic or slightly disappointed by what you saw? What did you think?
Was there anything in highlights, Sylvan?
Not really. It's difficult for him because, as you say, he missed so many games, and the team seems that we need to rely on him in the Europa League because of the injuries and Giroud's departure as well. So he's actually has a big card to play in that in the competition, and we are a bit short of forward actually when you think about it. So I mean, not always, but with Lacazette also injured, he has a lot of game time to come, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
he didn't gain his sharpness, that's the main question.
What were your thoughts, Anita?
Well, yeah, I agree with Tillon. He hasn't really been playing a lot with all his injuries and everything, but he will have to pick up his form now, especially for the Europa League, since he is now basically our main striker, with Lacazette being injured and Aubameyang not being eligible to play. So, yeah, we will need his performances to be a lot better than what we saw so far, but I'm not worried yet, because he isn't world-class striker that you would like to have up front, but we know that what he can do and that he can score goals, and that's what we expect him and want him to do. I think that in the next few matches, expect him to play against Östersund in this return leg, so maybe mm-hmm. that will be a bit better for him. Maybe he will get to play some of the league matches as well. Depends on how Lacazette will be going and Aubameyang and everything to pick up his form for Europa League. Who knows who will we get in the next phase of the knockout stage. We will need his goals, I'm sure.
Yeah, and if not his goals, I mean, we all know that Welbeck's not the most prolific finisher, but his work rate, as was evidenced in the cup final against Chelsea, it can be a big advantage to this team. I mean, understandably, he was probably a little bit erring on the side of caution, what with not just playing away in sub-zero temperatures in his first game in a very long time, really, for certainly first start. But also, of course, the 4G pitch, or is it 3G, whatever it is, something G pitch, anyway, the mobile phone pitch. He was probably, given that he's had knee injuries, was probably playing within himself slightly on that surface. I mean, what's do either of you have opinions on the 4G pitches in general? I mean, obviously in the middle of winter in Sweden, it's probably not a bad thing because you have got a playing surface, but do you think that significantly affects the players or affects the way they play, or do you think that's just fans speculating about things they don't know what they're talking about?
I really don't know anything. So perhaps Silvan can give his input.
I do play 5-a-side on 3 and 4G, and obviously I play 11-a-side on grass, so we all know it's really different football, the space of the ball, the bouncing, when you turn, when you make a turn, you run, and everything is different, so it's really, it's a different game. And I don't talk about sliding backwards on 4G pitch. You could see the state of both of my legs, because I do like a sliding tackle, and they're quite burnt, basically. All my shins are burnt, and so it does affect your play, basically.
So you're a bit more Gilles Grimondi than Robert Pires, then?
Yeah. A sliding tackle is nice, actually.
I sort of wanted to flag that up, because obviously, because the performance against, let's face it, a team that looked short of match fitness and at a lower level, a lot of Arsenal fans were quite critical about the performance. But I would say that given our expectations before the game, coming out of it with a 3-0 victory probably exceeded our pre-match expectations. And despite the fact it wasn't the most inspiring game, I think we should be very happy, particularly given how much we struggled on a 4G pitch in the FA Cup against Sutton United not so long ago. So I think we should take what we could out of it. The only other thing I wanted to ask about is what you thought of the performance of Callum Chambers in defence, because obviously he got a rare run out.
Didn't notice anything special. I mean, obviously, clean sheet was kept, but yes, there were some mistakes in defense. But I kind of expect that to happen in every single match Arsenal's playing this season. So, no matter who is playing in defense, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, obviously, we head back to the Emirates with a 3-0 lead after the first leg. I mean, looking ahead to that game, what sort of team do you think the manager is going to put out? Do you think he's going to err on the side of caution and play most of his best players, or do you think he's going to start resting people with the League Cup final in mind?
I think he will be playing some youngsters because I saw that the under 23 players are playing, right now against Leicester. And from early team news, I saw that Edin Ketia and some other players were not part of that team. So it's expected to see them play against Leicester since in the next few days. So, I mean, obviously, it's a really good result. 3-0 away is awesome, and it's hard to expect Leicester to show up and, you know, try to win the match at the Emirates where we are at home and actually looking like a completely different team. And I would, anything less than resting players for League Cup final would be a surprise for me.
Well, as we speak, our under-23s are getting mullered by Leicester's under-23s, who've just scored again to make it 3-0 to Leicester under-23 away at Leicester. I suppose it's probably not a bad thing that we've got so many irregulars out of there. But looking at the team there, I mean, there's three or four players there that would normally be in the under-18s and possibly only join the under-18s this season. And the only players of any great note playing for the under-23s tonight are new boy Mavropanos, Vlad Dragomir, who's obviously got an excellent name, and Josh De Silva, and possibly you could say Osei Tutu at fullback, but the rest of them are kind of relatively underused at that level. So that's quite a lot of players who have obviously been kept aside with the Östersund's home game in mind.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think that this, if they won tonight, it would be taking over the first spot in the league. It's Premier 2, so it's a shame. But yeah, I mean, you have to think about the Europa League and the upcoming cup final.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, for someone like Reece Nelson, who's got an Eddie Nketiah, players who've got to the point of being so dominant at under 23 level, you've got to think that exposure to the first team, particularly at home, has got to be better for their development. And hopefully, being able to deploy them means that people like Ozil can either have the night off or at least a large part of the night off. And hopefully, the fewer injury worries in the squad mean that we can, unlike in the FA Cup, we can actually, if we either play the youngsters from the start and have a very strong bench, or have a strong team from the start and have an extremely young bench, rather than having a sort of mishmash of neither, really. I mean, so obviously, I guess we're assuming that the Östersunds game is going to go our way, and we're going to find ourselves in the next round, judging by our first leg disparity. But of course, beyond that, there's a small matter of a League Cup final. I mean, yeah.
Don't ask for predictions.
Well, I mean, I might spare you that, but I mean, I wanted to know what your thoughts about it were. I mean, obviously, Man City will be the overwhelming favourites, in given their form as well, and given the fact that they are being allowed to wear their first kit and we have to wear red shorts to go with our red shirts because stupid shit. I wondered what you thought looking forward to the game. Can you see another one where we turn up at Wembley and pull an unexpectedly effective performance out of the bag, or is this Man City team a rather different proposition to those that we've beaten in the past?
They're really good, aren't they?
No.
Yeah.
We have probably 65-70% of the ball possession. So we're going to have to make two with 30%. And so we'd have to hit them on the break. And we got taste up front with Aubameyang and possibility with passing the ball. So if we defend deep and hit them on the break, I think that we didn't. That could work, maybe. And we'll be chasing the game, most of the game. I can't see us trying to outplay them on the football side at all.
I mean, looking forward to it, assuming that there are no new injuries accumulated between now and then, what team would you put out for the League Cup final? What would your starting 11 be? I mean, that's a question to either of you, whoever wants to answer it first.
Well, obviously, like Silo mentioned, Aubameyang up front. I mean, no-brainer there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I liked how Mesut Özil and Mkhitaryan combined for that third goal in Östersund, so I would definitely pick them. Nacho Monreal, obviously, he's our most prolific striker.
Yeah. Goal machine.
Maybe he will add another goal.
See how many players he can stick one in off.
I'm not sure how good and healed Koscielny's Achilles are. So, yeah. And if he's up for it or not will be interesting to see. Obviously, Mustafi. And, The midfield pair, would it be Xhaka, Elneny, and then Ramsey and Wilshere? I'm not sure how injured Ramsey was or wasn't. Mm. So yeah, I would definitely go with Ramsey. I think we missed Ramsey against Tottenham.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I would definitely start him if he is ready and not injured at all. And I hope he isn't.
Well, assuming that he is fit. And you sound like you're talking about a midfield three. What would your midfield three be?
I think there's a lot of hate for Xhaka and his bad moments in match that usually lead to a goal. But I would still start him. I don't mind him as a player, and I think he can do well, especially when it's like a big stage like that. So I would go with him and Elneny, and then Ramsey up front, and as I said, Özil and Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang up front. And am I missing someone?
I think we're probably assuming you're going to select Hector Bellerin at right back.
Yeah. And Nacho on the other side, and probably Kos and Mustafi in the middle, and I have no idea who to start in goal.
Ah, do you not even have a preference, or are you just trying to second guess the manager?
No, I mean, all the joking around Ospina aside, he always does okay and really good and has some amazing saves and then, you know, drops the ball and stuff like that. And Čech can, you know, be guilty for one goal or even two goals and then pull out amazing saves that stop us from losing 4 or 5-0. I'm just really, really not sure. Probably would still go with Čech, but yeah.
What about you, Sylvain? What's your starting 11?
I'd go 3-4-1, actually.
Okay, yeah.
And so, Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan a little behind the main man, then back three. So Koscielny, Mustafi, and maybe Elneny, actually.
Okay.
I'll have Ospina in goal, because I think Ospina does the cup games.
Mm-hmm.
And also, tactically, he's not going to face many long balls and high balls with Guardiola, as we know.
That's true. Sergio Aguero is many things, but a towering giant in the box, he is not.
He's not going to cross for his head. He's going to go in the feet and he's going to shoot.
Yeah.
So Bellerin on the right and Montreal on the left. And the two midfielders. Ramsey is available. And is Jack available or is he still midfield?
It seems to be precautionary resting him against Östersund, partly because they've got a plastic pitch. And
so Ramsey will share in the middle if they're both fit.
Fair enough. Ultimately, because of the fluid role of Elneny, it could be either, or you know, you could move between formations with almost the same players, and accordingly, my team is very similar. I'd actually start a spinner in goal, because I think having a goalkeeper that's quick off his line is actually going to be, he doesn't come off his line for crosses, but he comes off his line for through balls. and I think that could be important to us. I think the fullbacks pick themselves. Again, Koscielny, Mustafi, Elneny alternating between centre half and defensive midfielder, depending on how much we're getting outplayed. But I would go for Xhaka and Ramsey as a midfield, with Wilshere to come on. depending on the state of the game, either for Ramsey if we were ahead late on, or for Xhaka if we need to score. So we keep Elneny as a kind of defensive base, rather than previously having taken Elneny off and leaving ourselves totally exposed on the counter. And yeah, I mean, the front three at this stage pick themselves. Assuming they're all fit, they are three genuine quality players who seem to have a good understanding with each other. So that in itself is a pretty strong set of cards to play. Do any of you think we might win?
Yeah, I mean, it would be so Arsenal, I think.
Is this the start of the latest Wenger saving his job?
I hope not.
I mean, yeah, it's possible, but it's going to be really hard. I'd say like a 30% chance maximum, to be honest.
Because Man City annoyingly won their home Champions League, their away Champions League game even more easily than us. So they're going to be able to rest players as well, which is what we were hoping wasn't going to be the case. I mean, who knows?
They don't play this week.
Oh no! That's right. They're playing tonight, aren't they? Apologies for crap information. It's the FA Cup against
Wigan.
It's a league
that plays every week. Champions League has every other week.
Yeah. well, there we go. Less said about that, probably the better. Yeah. Well, Man City are currently drawing 0-0 at Wigan after half an hour, which is terribly exciting, particularly for you listeners who, by the time you hear this, will already know the result. Yeah, I mean, looking beyond the games of this week, there's been quite a lot going on in the sort of broader Arsenal world of stuff. I mean, first off, I wanted to ask if any of you had actually seen the Hector Bellerin talks to the Oxford Union video, now that the video's been out.
I saw a bit of it.
Yeah, me too.
Not everything.
Which bit did you see? Were you linked to the much picked up on Arsenal fan TV might not be so great after all comments?
Yeah. No, I saw the beginning, then something in the middle, then yeah, and then the Arsenal fan TV. I saw where he was speaking about arriving in London, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really interesting, because it's not very easy as a 16-year-old to move to London, to be fair.
Yeah, and he was talking, without naming him, about the importance of arriving at the same time as John Torral, who obviously is half English, half Spanish, and they've been at La Masia in Barcelona together. Which he credited a lot, both at the time and subsequently, with helping him settle in. But of course, it seems quite funny that now, because obviously Bellerin comes across as such a kind of modern London metrosexual geezer hipster combo that he's, he, you know,
horrible clothing.
Well, let's not get onto that, because Twitter seems to be able to get very angry about that for no apparent reason. You know, I mean, footballers in slightly odd clothes is not remotely an unusual thing, and at least he's attempting to put some thought into his rather than just buying the shiniest thing he can find off a peg like some. I mean, if you think his clothes are bad, wait till Aubameyang settles in. I found it very... I thought if anyone gets a chance to watch it, if you find yourself with some free time to kill... Yeah, obviously not every single question is that wonderfully thought through when it's being asked to him, but his responses are really interesting. You know, he comes across as a pretty thoughtful guy who's aware of the world in a much wider sense, and obviously he's aware of the criticism that people have given him for kind of having broader interests beyond simply being an obsessive footballer. But he speaks quite eruditely about how he's got into those interests and why they're justifiable. Sorry, what are you going to say, Nita?
Imagine being criticised for having more interests than just your job.
Yeah, I mean, it's farcical, really. Particularly as a footballer, no matter how much you want to, that you can only, at the level of physical, you know, impact that they have these days, there's only so much time you can actually spend training. And obviously, you know, there'll be people saying, why can't they watch video and know how to play the position? You know, he's positioning rubbish, blah, blah, blah. But essentially, I think it's having a footballer that's more well-rounded is actually more beneficial for us in the long term. because it's going to help train their brain to think in different ways about different things rather than just always being rigid. Now, now obviously, perhaps a little more rigidity in thinking when it comes to defensive positioning for our team as a whole might be worth considering, but that's not going to change under Arsene Wenger, so no amount of moaning at Hector Bellerin is going to make any difference there.
I mean, people often forget that it's actually their job being a football player and perform in matches and everything. What I mean, I know that when I'm at work, I do my work and fully concentrated and everything. And then when you get home, you just want to relax and find something else to do. Not try not to think about what you have to do at work again. And I just, as many things, football and social media and everything, I just don't understand how can you criticize Hector Bellerin for being interested in dressing nice and watching, I don't know what he's watching now, basketball or American football and everything. I mean, come on, he's what, 22 years old?
Yeah, and one of the things he's talking about is, you know, he's interested in branding and marketing and how he's got involved in setting up companies and this, that and the other, and they're trying to get patents to develop technology, you know. He's clearly a very outward-looking guy, and when you hear him speak in the interview and in general, you know, it's very clear that he's someone who is looking to develop in all kinds of ways, and we should champion that, because that's also, being that kind of personality is also more likely to help him improve as a player, because he's actively seeking knowledge rather than waiting for it to be thrust at him, which, as we all know, you know, under a slightly laissez-faire management regime is probably not the best thing.
Yeah, I just remember what Jesse Lingard from Man United is famous for and how he acts on social media and off-pitch and everything, and just Hector, I like his presentation much better than, for example, Lingard.
Well, Hector Bellerin isn't a massive bellend, which helps. I mean, without wishing to be crude. Yeah, well, anyway, any listeners out there, if you get a chance to watch the YouTube video, do tune in. It's well worth the watch. First, you get to know more about one of the players and their personality, but also he's got some quite interesting views and actually is clearly quite a thoughtful guy and quite willing to be honest in a way that some other footballers aren't, and I think we should certainly celebrate that. Looking beyond beyond Hector, there is obviously now we've actually bought some players as a football club, you know, heaven forbid. The summer transfer rumours have been going batshit crazy. Is there any that have caught either of your eyes particularly?
I mean, I think we were tracking some player from Napoli.
Yes, Koulibaly, who's a brick shit house of a central defender.
Really?
Yeah, he's like 6'5" or something, and he's the same sort of shape as Sol Campbell as well, you know.
I like it.
Instinctively, it appeals, doesn't it? I mean, have you seen anything of Koulibaly play, Sylvain?
I knew Koulibaly was playing in France, but I'm not sure it's the same one, actually.
Well, it's quite a popular name in a lot of ex-French African colonies. But he was born in France, so he is actually sort of, well, he was French at youth level, and then he transferred to Senegal. But yeah, he started out at Metz, and then went to Genk in Belgium, and has been at Napoli for quite a long time now, for 4 years, and is a sort of first choice player for them. And obviously, for those that don't follow European football, Napoli are top of Serie A at the moment, despite the fact that obviously everyone just associates Juventus's recent domination. So
they will be kicked out of Europa League, probably.
Fingers crossed, yes. That would be good. We'd like them to get knocked out of Europa League.
They put their B team in the Europa League because they want to concentrate on the Serie A, so yeah, there's a bot.
Yeah, just like I said in a previous podcast, we want those teams left in the Europa League who are challenging for domestic league competitions to stay preoccupied with such things, so that less of them, we have to worry about less of them as the competition develops. You know, it's not the same tournament as it was when when Man United were playing in it last year, but hopefully it can get a little bit closer to that by the time we progress. Another transfer rumour that caught my eye, there's one that's been going on a while, is Timo Werner has been linked again, the RB Leipzig centre-forward, which I found hilarious. You know, we've just spent 100 million quid on two strikers in the space of 6 months, both of whom are quick strikers with decent movement. And we're being linked to Timo Werner, who is basically a cross between Lacazette and Aubameyang in terms of pace and liveliness in the box. So that gave me a great amount of amusement. But one that I think seems to have a lot more plausibility is having missed out on Leon Goretzka, who, like every other top quality German midfielder, is going on a free to Bayern. Ha ha. There's Max Meyer from Schalke, or Maximilian Meyer, if you want his full name, who's a 22-year-old midfielder who whose contract expires at the end of the season. And I know that we've been watching him for a while. And he's someone that was like a number 10 type player, but sort of hit a little bit of a rough patch of form after a very promising start, and now seems to be playing in a sort of more of a Santi Cazorla deep lying role, and seems to be flourishing there. So so apparently we're chasing him furiously. Have either of you ever seen him play?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
Well, if anyone's interested, he's got four caps for Germany and he scored for Germany as well. So, you know, he's on the fringes of the national team as well.
22 years old and free. Yeah. Sounds very Arsenal.
He's also very like Cazorla in that he's a short ass as well. He's taller than Santi. He's 5'8", so he's a relative giant by comparison. But yeah, it's nice to know, obviously, that we are looking at midfielders, given that's an area of weakness for us even now. The other one is the perennially linked, forever linked, Nabil Fekir from Lyon, who we appeared to buy before he did his knee a couple of years ago. But again, I don't know about you guys, but it doesn't seem to me very plausible we're going to be looking to buy someone that's halfway between a number 10 and a number, you know, sort of 9.5/10 player. So
yeah, we should definitely be looking more at the back, the defenders and the goalkeeper. So
you think? But I mean, what,
he's a very good, to be fair.
Yeah,
he's a very good. In this side in the future, at the end of the season, he's a very good to get signed. Definitely.
I mean, do you think he's a player that would be worth us looking at, Sylvain, or do you just think our positional imbalance in the squad means it'd be a waste of our time?
He's really good, so he would bring something else, but we would just buy the player in the position, basically. But he's good. Definitely, he's a quality player. He would add, but where do you put him?
Yeah, this is a thing. I mean, the one thing that he would bring to the Arsenal team if we did end up bizarrely buying him, quite apart from his goal-scoring record, which has been excellent in his last two injury-free seasons, particularly this year, is he's a definite set-piece specialist. And let's face it, we don't appear to be turning any of our existing players into set-piece specialists, so maybe picking one up from somewhere might be a good idea. So moving on from transfers, we've had some terribly exciting news this week. That's right, it's shirt sponsors. I mean,
that we finance all those new transfers and new strikers and not defenders.
Yeah, or alternative, you know, I mean, let's face it, we could have had this entire, for those of you who don't know, listeners, we've renewed our sponsorship deal with shirt sponsors with Emirates, which came as a massive surprise to everyone, obviously. But it is our largest ever sponsorship deal, I suppose, for shirt sponsors, which is, it works out as about £40 million a year on average, something like that. Which is obviously significant, and it is also a reflection of the fact that Arsenal tend to prefer to maintain long-term partnerships with sponsors rather than Man United, who are just basically anyone's for some money, and will happily change their shirt sponsors at every single opportunity. So the new deal extends until 2024, which means we've got another 6 years of advertising a Middle Eastern airline on our shirts. I mean, How do you guys feel about that? Is that something that you're happy with? Would you prefer to try and look elsewhere and play the market more? Or do you think staying with someone that provided continuity and strengthening that relationship is a good thing for a football club to be doing?
I think it's good that we managed to negotiate the sleeve sponsor for the season 19-20. That's better than we had before. So that's another income for us to perhaps, you know, help with financing new contracts and new players and everything. I don't mind. I really, it's financial stuff and I don't know much about it and honestly trust the club to find the best. And reading that it's the tied with Chelsea on the second place for the best deal in the Premier League at the moment, with obviously Manchester United being the first, I really don't mind. I just hope that, you know, as years gone by, when we signed first with them, I think it was also one of the best deals in football and everything. And then, like, next year or just 2 years later, there were just, like, double the amount of money everyone was giving away and stuff like that. So I hope that, I only hope that 6 years is not too long and that maybe we could, you know, try to negotiate a better deal maybe if the market proves that way. So yeah, that's all I think about it.
Any thoughts, Sylvain?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for continuity. Well, I was thinking also, how long do we have on the stadium naming right? Because obviously it's the same company. So
yeah, that's true.
I was wondering if they were looking to renew, and well, it would make sense actually if they renew on the shelf. They might as well renew on the stadium and give us plenty of money.
Well, I think the stadium naming rights have been locked in for quite a while yet, so I don't think we're going to benefit from that directly. But certainly the opportunity for Emirates as a brand to have both, I imagine, is a positive relationship for both parties, I guess. And it, as you say, it offers continuity. And I think there's another factor here which I thought of, which is obviously everyone at the moment is still in a situation of thinking the football money part is going to keep growing endlessly with the, you know, the sponsorship deals or with the TV money. But there's actually quite a lot of uncertainty in the UK and in Western economies with all that's going on in the world around us. I mean, you know, the American economy is being screwed around by Donald Trump to create tax breaks for the rich. But so God knows what the impact's that's going to be. And of course, in the UK, we have whatever variation of Brexit actually happens in the end.
Yeah, it will certainly impact on the economical side, which everybody knows, but we won't see the consequences until you're included, and it might be bad.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, one of the things that made me think of that is the knowledge that Kevin De Bruyne's new contract has been negotiated to make sure he gets paid in euros rather than pounds. Which is quite interesting because it shows that somebody, his agent or himself, is definitely aware of the potential repercussions of the UK's departure from the European Union. Perhaps, maybe, we'll see what we get. I think at this time, for Arsenal to get something locked down when there's a period of uncertainty on the horizon is probably... I mean, it's very Arsenal, isn't it? Let's be slightly conservative and stable. But I think it's also, on this occasion, it's also wise rather than just being circumspect as is the Arsenal way. Now, there's also been, quite apart from all that going on, there's been a bit of intrigue in the women's team, hasn't there, Sylvain? So handing over for you to take over... I suppose this is Sylvain Jamet's Arsenal Ladies Corner. But yeah, tell us about the comings and goings, because it's all quite interesting.
Yeah, so the transfer window was exactly the same as the men's, bar a few days. So we actually lost four players during that window, which is pretty the number of players in the squad. We lost two players to Everton. One of them was on loan and so decided to stay, Chloe Kelly, mm-hmm. which is... As me and you know, was one of our neighbours. She lived in the same area as us.
Yeah, not anymore.
And yeah, Chloe's boyfriend actually lives in Liverpool as well, so it makes sense for us to move over there. And we also lost a promising left back, Taylor Hines, which doesn't make sense to me, but And surprisingly, we lost Vian Sampson, who has been injured for 2 years because her contract ran out and the club didn't renew it because she's still rehabbing.
Mm-hmm.
And straight after the transfer window closed, we lost Gemma Rose, who decided to leave the club because she wasn't happy. And we don't really know why, but it seems a very complex story because when you leave after the transfer window, it's closed, you cannot sign for a new club. So she's basically gone home in Plymouth and stayed with her family.
Yeah, I mean,
French.
There's obviously, yeah, quite something significant going on there. I mean, that I read that her playing time had kind of dropped off of quite a lot in the squad and she wasn't getting nearly as much time in the first team. Is that accurate?
Yeah, basically on the 14th of Jan, we play Reading away and she had a bad game due to bizarre Suarez Evra kind of incident actually with a handshake.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, the media don't talk about it, but one of the Reading players refused to shake her hand actually, which was it didn't go down very well. She had a bad game and she was subbed during the game actually and dropped from the following games and then just disappeared. So it's quite unusual in football, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the fact that she seems to have left the club by some degree of common consent without anywhere else to go suggests that there may be something that's affecting her beyond simply the vagaries of first team selection. And if that's the case, then obviously we hope that that is something she gets in any help that she needs with or is resolved in due course, because for a player to effectively intentionally leave himself without a club is quite an extreme step.
Yeah, it's really unusual, but apparently, yeah, she wasn't happy with what was happening at the club, and she had personal reason to leave. That's what the club told us. So. If you dig deep, you might find some dodgy stuff. We don't know.
Well, we're not going to speculate about that.
It's as dark as the men's football world, to be honest. So.
Darker in what way?
Working with agents. These are stuff behind the scenes. I've seen it, and it's exactly the same as a man, basically. There's no difference. It's an equal world.
So, I mean, apart from obviously departures of varying degrees of profile, and as you say, it's particularly disappointing to lose some of the younger players who were looking like the future of the club. What else is there to report, I suppose, on the Arsenal women's end? I mean, it looks like the form hasn't really become much more consistent than it was before the change of management.
The playing style has improved, to be honest.
Okay.
Which is really good. We are looking forward to the League Cup final against, guess who? Manchester City.
Yay!
So it's on the 14th of March. A Wycombe Wanderer, actually.
Okay.
So, at 7:30, so it's not very practical to get to, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah.
So, the quality of the attacking play is improving at the moment. The new manager is actually trying to be like Arsene Wenger in terms of football.
Does that mean the defence is all over the shop, or...?
Yes, actually, we have so many injuries this week, and we play with two wingers at full back and one left back at centre back.
Right. I mean, that's been a problem for the Arsenal women's team all season, though, hasn't it? Defensive injuries.
Yeah. We still have a lot of injuries, and we actually had one of the upcoming players, Anasid Bey, who was just breaking into the squad, adjusting a right foot as well. So. I spoke to her on Sunday. Hopefully, it's not a long injury, but she's going to miss a few games and the international week. So, and Kim Lytton is back, actually, which was the biggest news for us after a shit injury. She's been out for nearly a year now. So, it's good to have her back, a world-class player like her. They don't come up in the street.
Yes, I mean, for those listeners who aren't as familiar with the Arsenal women's team, Kim Lytton is... Well, probably one of the best female players in her position in the world, and certainly because she was at the club previously, wasn't she? And excelled
then. Yeah,
she
was then, so. I mean, 8 years.
Yeah, and she was, and Eve, despite not playing as a direct striker, scored a lot of goals, and was very much driving the team forward, and has had a great success in America and elsewhere as well. So is very highly thought of around the world.
Yeah, yeah, she's actually at the peak as well, because she's going to be 28 this year, so she's in her best years. And we saw her coming back on last 15, and she has a lot of pace and technical abilities, phenomenal as usual, and vision and passing. So it's great to have her back. As Arsene always say, it's like a new signing.
So aside from the League Cup final, obviously the Arsenal Women's League position has been a slight disappointment this season. I mean, where are they at the moment, and what else is there to look forward to for the season?
We're in third place now after climbing a bit on the table, but we're 6 points behind Chelsea in second place and 8 points behind Man City. So the top two qualified for the Champions League, so it's not going to happen, basically. The top teams lose like one game in the season.
Yeah. Well, the women's Man City, the Man City's women's team has been so dominant, hasn't it, the last...
Yeah, they don't seem to lose many games, and they play very good football as well. Not as good as Guardiola's one, but it's not bad at all, to be fair. We are not good enough to compete against them and Chelsea at the moment, unfortunately.
And for you, is that the quality of the players at the team's disposal, or is that disparities in coaching and resources?
The resources are about the same, and the budget are quite similar, so... The training conditions are really good at Arsenal as well. So it's just the quality, yeah, it's a bit of a problem because the squad is unbalanced.
A bit like the first rest, team. Yeah. Same sort of problems, aren't there?
Yeah. We have like one defensive midfielder and like not enough defender at the moment. So it's... But yeah, it's just they have a lot of quality players at Chelsea and Man City, and we get a little less quality player in numbers, and then it's hard to compete. But the new manager is bringing really good attacking football, so if they start flexing, next season might be good.
Fair enough. Well, sounds familiar to fans of the men's team. Hopefully, yeah. Both can make a positive transition over the coming summer. On returning to the men's team, obviously we're still getting the different rumours about who is going to replace Arsene and is Arsene going to leave, and of course Arsene is saying I'm not going to leave. Ancelotti's name has appeared again with suggestions that he's turned down a chance to potentially take over from Unai Emery at PSG to theoretically take over from Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, even though neither manager has actually left their club yet and might yet achieve enough to make it very hard to get rid of him.
Emery's gone more or less at PSG.
Even if they turn it around against Real Madrid in the Champions League?
They would need a miracle to turn it around, and he has targets to achieve, and I don't think he's going to achieve them. So. He's out of contract, basically. That's why he's...
Okay.
They can get rid of him, they just need not to renew him, basically. So, Antonio Conte will be ready to take the seat.
Very possibly. I mean, one thing that is going to be very interesting this summer is talking about PSG and Real Madrid, and obviously the good win for Madrid in the first leg, is that both teams, unless both manage to somehow... Well, one of them isn't going to, because one of them's going to get knocked out of the Champions League. But and of course, Real Madrid's domestic form has been through the toilet for parts of this season. There's going to be big changes at both clubs, and of course, as we know, Arsenal are quite up for picking up the odd person that's let go by a super club for slightly less money than they might be worth. Obviously, Real Madrid are going to have a squad renewal because they need to, you know, Benzema stop firing and Cristiano Ronaldo's not getting any younger, and if they want to either squeeze the last vestiges of life out of him or replace him, that's going to involve spending a lot of money. And if they're going to spend a lot of money, then they're going to have to make sacrifices elsewhere. And of course,
PSG's situation is having completely laughed in the face of financial fair play last summer. You know, the storm clouds are gathering on that front, and they're either going to have to sell players to balance the books, or they're going to have to try and take on UEFA, which might be quite a difficult challenge for them, considering that everyone else in the world would quite like to see their lavish spending blow up in their face. So there might well be opportunities to pick up players there. I mean, is there any, who do you think would be plausible, and who would you have your eyes on?
No, PSG are going to sell them definitely because they're really, really in the red. So Rabiot is probably available. Be a good choice. I think Real Madrid will push for Neymar actually.
Well, this is a story, isn't it, that Neymar is going to have spent 1 year in Paris and then to go to Real Madrid. I mean, that just seems very odd. I mean, do you think it's just because Paris managed to then get the Mbappe deal sorted and they thought it was an opportunity they couldn't miss, and so they're happy to let Neymar go, or is there more to it than that from what you hear in France?
It's more like Neymar, because Neymar really wants to win the Ballon d'Or.
Mm-hmm.
And if Neymar thinks he's got more chances at Madrid, he will initiate the move. There's no doubt about it. So,
I suppose the question is, can Real Madrid actually afford Neymar?
I'm not sure. They're bad on financial fair play, so they could spread the huge deficit over the coming years. That's my guess. Especially if they're going to sell as well Ronaldo, Bale, and a couple of players as well.
Well, I suppose watch this space. But yeah, I do think with, you know, it being a World Cup year and a number of the big teams in a certain degree of flux, we are going to see quite a lot of interesting transfers this summer, and hopefully there might be bargains to had for Arsenal. We certainly need them in certain positions. Goalkeeper, central defence, and ball-winning midfield probably very high on the list.
Then we'll sign a striker.
Yeah, exactly. We'll find
Harry Kane for £20.
But I mean, obviously, that would be the advantage of if we're able to pick up someone like the aforementioned Max Meyer for free. That allows Arsene to continue his diminutive playmaker fetish without actually using all the funds available for other positions which might need a little more attention.
Maybe he won't be here next season, so...
Well, indeed. There are many questions to be answered. Last thing I wanted to touch on, which is related to that, is the arrival in London of a certain Josh Kroenke. For those that don't know, this is son of Stan, who is apparently spending 3 months in London on a kind of fact-finding mission about how Arsenal works. Is this representative of the catalyst for change, or is this something we should be worried about because it effectively represents dynastic ownership? Where do you guys stand on that?
I think he wants to learn how the club is working, basically, and to me it's fine. Especially from what I'm reading, he's preparing for the after Wenger period, so it does make sense to have a better knowledge of what's happening around, and especially if he's going to have more control, because obviously his dad is the owner, so it's better to have somebody who actually knows what he's doing rather than come and make decision without knowing what's up around.
Well, he should just have open Arsenal Twitter and he would know everything.
Now.
About running the club and how the club works and financial stuff and, you know, those people know everything.
I mean, obviously, you know, in his own life, he's president of two of his father's teams, which is the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche. And he's been involved in Arsenal as a non-executive director for 5 years now. So clearly, despite only being 37 and not actually having a career in sport, he has been involved at least in sporting franchises, as they call them in America, for quite some period of time. So hopefully he may have picked up something useful that he can bring to the table. But yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously we've got no idea what anyone in the family is thinking apart from planning to stick around because they never tell us anything. Well, I suppose on that note, that brings us to a slightly ambiguous conclusion for this week's Daily Canon Weekly podcast, but I think it's an appropriate time to knock it on the head. Thanks again to Anita and Sylvan for keeping me company and for talking to us all. And thank you for listening, if you got this far. And yes, do get in touch if you want. There's anything you want us to try and dig more deeply into or do some research on or indeed just argue about. Yeah, drop us a line at Daily Canon Pod on Twitter. Or if you've just got any feedback or even if you just wanted to send me insults, I'm perfectly prepared to deal with that. So yeah, do please get in touch and we'd love to hear from you. Other than that, nothing much to say except for, again, thanks to Anita.
Yeah, hopefully we'll meet again on Monday with a trophy.
Yes. And thank you, Sylvan.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, as we say in France.
And yes, hope you all have a lovely week. Hope Arsenal have a lovely week. And as Anita says, hopefully that lovely week culminates in a trophy and a nice easy draw in the next round of the Europa League knockout stages.